And I followed this weird pipeline where, like, my teachers would be like, hey, you should go to this school, you should go to that school. And so I ended up going to Carver in Towson, and I studied oil painting. And that's when I, like, really knew I wanted to be an artist. I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to be a fine artist. And so I was actually doing a lot of Afrofuturism before it was called Afrofuturism. I was, like, dealing with, like, cybernetics, technology, robots, like, this implants, dissecting myself. It was, like, a lot of that stuff as, like, a high schooler. And then it kind of just naturally transitioned into, like, animation work.
Welcome back, y'all, to another great episode of Why Y'all Working. We got the people here tuning in from wherever you're from, whether that's on Earth, whether you're calling in from a space station. You got the best here with you today, and we got a special guest, Jordan Jackson. I am your co-host, Michael Ogusanya.
I'm Alair Jameson.
And you guys are tuned into a great episode. This is a little different from the norm, but we're here to give you guys the refreshing topics and refreshing insights. We have here Jordan Jackson. Jordan Jackson is an interdisciplinary artist. You heard that? That was four syllables right there. Comic book writer, animator, and graphic designer based in the lovely Baltimore, Maryland. A founder of JP Jackson Art. You're a recent member and vendor with what was Artscape last year and hopefully Artscape coming up. You are focused on empowering Black artists and storytellers by telling stories that Black people often don't see. You started your career at 10 years old, 12 years into your life, you got into the Art Academy, and you've always honed in your craft, whether it was oil painting to 2D animation. You graduated from MICA, and you are well on your way to creating more art to help us, you know, conceptualize the Black experience, whether you're 2 or 200, so... Thank you for being here. How was the intro?
Thanks for the intro. Thank you. Appreciate it. You did good. It's funny to say that I started at 10. So like it's I guess we can kind of slip into that journey. So like as Michael, as you stated, when I was a kid, I like drew a lot of the stuff you see on this wall behind me. So I was like drawing a bunch of like Transformers. I like copying stuff mostly. And my parents, I grew up in Baltimore County in Woodlawn. It's like 10 minutes outside. Really, it's 5 minutes from the city line, Baltimore city line. So my family kind of got me into these different programs in the county doing like in middle school, I went to a magnet school, Sudbrook, studied how to actually draw like still lives, tennis shoes, people, violin, stuff like that. And then and I followed this weird pipeline where like my teachers would be like, hey, you should go to this school, you should go to that school. And so I ended up going to Carver in Towson, and I studied oil painting. And that's when I like really knew I wanted to be an artist. I'm like, oh, okay, we're gonna be a fine artist. And so I was actually doing a lot of Afrofuturism before it was called Afrofuturism. I was like dealing with like cybernetics, technology, robots, like this implants, dissecting myself. It was like a lot of that stuff as like a high schooler. And then it kind of just naturally transitioned into like animation work. Because as I left Carver and went to MICA to study animation, I saw this kind of parallel between like storytelling. Like all the work that I do is about telling stories. And so while I was at MICA, I did a lot of stories. Did animations every year that I was told not to do because they were too long. Like, Jordan, you're a freshman. Don't do a 3-minute animation. I was like, I don't care. I want to tell a good story, or at least tell a story. And I don't care if the animation's rough. It's important that I kind of get this craft down. And so I would do that every year. And so I like really enjoyed like doing these different animations that centered us in these like fantasy or science fiction worlds. And so a lot of that carried into my comic book work. And I graduated in 2016, so it's been a minute. And I did not intend to be in comic books. That was not a part of the plan. I always loved going to comic cons. Like my dad would take me to Baltimore Comic Con as a kid. And I had a friend reach out to me. He was like, hey, my cousin's working on like a TV show pitch. Do you want to come up to Harlem to do some network? We're doing some environment design for a pitch deck. And I stepped into this space. It was a Black Comics Festival in Harlem. And I was like, looking around like, this is all black people making comic books. I'm like, oh, this is where I need to be. And so that was like my first time really seeing a bunch of black comic book creators like in the forefront. And it was like, it was a game changer. So I was like, all right, this is what I'm doing. And so it kind of took, I think that was 2017. So it took me like 3 or 4 years, it took me 2 years to like, kind of like get everything together, like build a portfolio of work for comic conventions. And then I got invited to a small two-day show in North Carolina called QuirkCon. And that was the last time that show happened, but it changed. It kind of like put me down the path going into like comic.
Oh yeah, I was about to say something. I was on mute.
Anyway, go ahead.
I did want to talk for at least for our audience and get to the bits and pieces of like, why did you start, you know, wanting to tell stories, and what is your passion behind trying to tell these stories and finding that black space? Like, what was it for you when you found that black space? Why was it like, oh my God, like, you know, but you said it so like just normal, you've been in it for a minute, but like, I could imagine like your good and your joy for, you know, actually finding a space where others are like you, who share the same passions and, you know, actually want to make a difference for others like ourselves. Right. And see ourselves just like I said, in those same publications that you're going to see in comic cons everywhere, really. So, you know, can you talk to a little bit about, you know, why you do this specifically and what that actually means to you?
Yeah. So I did gloss over there. So the reality is that like throughout my like studies as like a teenager until a young adult, I rarely had, I had one black art teacher at Micah. That was the first and maybe last professor I ever had. And that was my senior year. I was like, what? And, but a lot of my teaching was European, like academic, like studying like white artists. My high school teachers did their best to kind of give us different black artists to look at, like Kehinde Wiley. But for me, it was always like, I was always in the space of like, I just want to find someone that's black that does like comic books and animation. And because I could do the fine art thing, but like that, I felt like I needed to do, I feel like I wanted to do everything, but the comic books was kind of speaking to me. Just because as a kid, like watching things, like we had Static Shock. That was great. Mm-hmm. And I watched a lot of anime, but it's still like, there wasn't enough of us there. And like present on like the mainstream platforms. And so I guess just this fact of like not seeing myself in the work, or like not seeing black faces often in the creation of certain projects, made me kind of just be like, Jordan, you got to do this. Like, you're doing this for yourself because you got to do it. But then as I got older, it came to this place of like really not seeing, like, the lack of representation was very real. And I felt like I had to take a stance and be like, all right, Jordan, like, you got to keep doing what you're doing and just keep amplifying the stories, and then, like, just networking and, like, staying focused on that path.
I want to, like, double tap into this conversation because I'm sure if you look at Allaire, I'm sure if you look at yours, my like notebooks back then, you saw the S's. Boy, I had 1 through 30 of the shoe collections that I would draw with the high tops and the low tops. I think there's a shared experience as young people, sometimes specifically as young black boys, that we have towards creating things that we don't see. I went into tech, Allaire went into tech, you went into art. Where did that split happen down the road where you said, I want to take this farther?
For me, probably, I was probably like 15 or 16, where my mother wanted me to be an aerospace engineer. I was like, ha, no, I will not sit here and study, analyze data. What is this? It took me a quick second to just do the veer off that path. I was like, oh, I thought I would be like designing planes. Like, no, this is more complicated than that. And, like, I got the calculus, y'all. I could do math, but
at least you made it to calculus.
Yeah, maybe one and two, and I was like, all right, it's a wrap. Sticks can't do this. Confusion. And so, like, I really, like, I kind of, like, did. My parents always kind of reminded me to kind of follow my passion. And in my soul, I was like, also, I can't do, like, I have to put my all into something if I'm going to, like, go out and exist in the world. So I was a teenager and I was like, all right, this is what we're doing. This is the path we're going down. But that kind of changed when I think about like what I saw myself as. Like I said earlier, I wanted to be a fine artist. When I applied to Micah or applied to another film school, I told them I wanted to be the Black Miyazaki. And those things changed. I was like, I don't know about this.
But why did they change? Like, is it because of the environment that you were in, or was it because just the ideologies didn't necessarily align with where you saw yourself within the fine, I guess, quote unquote art space? I hate when we say like trying to define Black art into like a specific genre, mm-hmm. because there's mm-hmm. so many different, you know, genres of what Black art could be and could be seen as. So, you know, I just want to touch on, like, from your perspective, what was that for you? And how did you make the distinction of deciding, like, hey, comic art is more so the type of art that I would like to produce? And it could be still fine art, right?
Within the comic world. Oh, no, it is. It is.
And so, you know what I'm saying? That's why I want to touch on that, so you can at least describe that a little bit more for the audience.
Gotcha. So, let's see.
I'm sure nobody asked you these questions.
Yeah, because it's just because for me it was just like I think a lot of what kind of like made me kind of shift in different spaces, just because like I had this kind of foresight of like where things were going. Like for me as a fine artist, I looked at a lot of like the work that I was seeing from Black fine artists, and I was like, once again, I was like, I don't see a lot of Afrofuturism. I didn't see a lot of that. And being at Micah, wasn't a lot of Black people. And so I didn't feel like this was like the space. Like it just didn't. It was like there's, I'm like, I'm doing this thing. I'm not fitting in this box. So I was like, then just it became a shifting and moving and pivoting. And so I kind of felt like things felt perfect and right. And so when I went into animation, there were more Black animators alongside me. But for me, the shift happened after a little bit of burnout post-college. And it became like thinking about the reality of like, how can I make money off of it? And still have like the integrity of my style and tell my own stories. And that was when I was like, oh, this is going to cost money. You're gonna need capital. You're gonna need a team to do this. If I do this by myself, this will take 5 years to produce. I guess a 30-minute animation by myself will take a lot of time. And so these things were actually what caused me to kind of shift even closer to comics, because once I found in comics, it was like, oh, you can churn out a story. Like for me, I can put out a story in 6 months. It's a little fast, but I can do it. Products out there in the world exist. And I'm like, oh, so like those kind of how I kind of like, that's how I kind of like got here and kind of, but getting into comics and started realizing that like everything has a shared, there's a shared connection. So like a lot of like you have comic books that can go into a fine art space. Someone placed that value on it. And I don't know, that's why I get into these, I'm not, I guess your question threw me off because there was always the conversation, what is fine art? What does that mean? And for me, it comes from a place of like, we're thinking about a traditional gallery space. And we're thinking about big wigs buying money, buying art, laundering money, you know, stuff like that. That's what I think about.
The real entrepreneurship. Oh, I got you.
Yeah, this is a little money laundering. But, I don't know. There was always a certain energy, when I step into those spaces, where it's like, you have to carry yourself in a certain way. And everyone took themselves very seriously. And so when I stepped out of spaces and kind of like moved around with comic book creators, that energy is still there because it's ego at the end of the day. It really is just all people's egos. But also there was a different, like kind of a different level of camaraderie. Like I felt so much like camaraderie from my like comic book peers that are like, Jordan, keep doing what you're doing. And it's been like really beautiful. I'm like, oh, this is, like this community building. It's like finding community. And that's kind of like that's where I'm at. Right?
That's tough. And I do want to touch on the fact that you kind of figured out in your college career, or at least earlier on in your kind of understanding of who you are and what you wanted to be and what you wanted to do, that everything takes money in order to do so. And it takes time, people, and effort and money. You know, money is mm-hmm. the basis for all of those things. So yes. How did you figure out for yourself a way in the comic book space to make money? Could you speak a little bit on like the industry aspect? Because not many people, you know, at least our audience is not exposed to mm-hmm. animators and Afrofuturism and stuff like that. So how do you kind of create your space where you kind of thrive and are successful at what you do? And, you know, kind of, I guess, give some steps to, you know, a younger audience member that is just like you, maybe at Mica or some similar type of situation where, hey, like, how do you go ahead and do this if this is something that you would like to do in the future?
Got you. So for me, what, like I said earlier, at my first show, I built out an entire portfolio of fan art. And so when I did that, you know, I was able to sell that, make some money. And I did some networking at the same time at a convention, at a table. I was behind a table selling my goods. And, you know, people come buy it. And then I would connect with another artist and just start walking around and talking to people. And I think that was my first event. That was amazing. And then I think my third or fourth event in the same year, 2019, it was around June, I went to a small one-day show called Galactic Con. It was in Howard County. And I met a black science fiction writer, self-published science fiction writer named Rod Van. And his wife was walking by and she was like, my husband's going to like your work. I'm going to send him to your table. And I was like, bet. And then he came by the table. He was like, I like this stuff. You should come by and check out my book. I started looking at his book. It was real sci-fi. I was like, this is dope. Because that was actually my first time really connecting with a self-published science fiction writer. And I was like, oh. He was like, yeah, I'm going to hire you to turn my book into a graphic novel. And I had never done that before. And I was like, we're going to figure it out. We're going to figure out how much it costs. And I did some research and sent some numbers back. He was like, we can do that. And so I produced a 60-page graphic novel in 3 months. That was really fast. I was excited. Yeah. I was like, this is money. So from that, I developed a kind of business strategy, and this was slipping into right before the pandemic started. I got my second event. I met another science fiction writer. His name's Arrow J. Knight, and I pitched him the same concept. So this is going to be my pitch. I was like, hey, do you need someone to adapt your novels into graphic novels? I got this guy. He was like, would you be willing to do it for like a royalty or something? I was like, no, man. I was like, you gotta pay the price. But he eventually paid the price, and we kind of built these partnerships where I was like, I've been working with these two writers for the past about 4 years now, and working with them really showed me to be like, you can make money doing client work. Like that's all I was doing client work. So doing comic books, doing animation, I'm doing some graphic design here and there. And I realized I needed more power. I needed to own my own IP, intellectual property. So I was like, all right, I'm going to write my own comic books and story. And then the domino effect. The rest is kind of history.
No, that's tough. No, I appreciate you mentioning that because, like, you know, it takes a while for every, at least, entrepreneur to really understand their craft and understand their mm-hmm. industry and their environment in order to be able to kind of maneuver and MacGyver their way to a place that makes sense for them. And you kind of found that with the client work and turning your own stories into the same novels and, you know, making that work for you, right? I think it's interesting that you, you know, decided not to take the royalties at first, which is, you know, everybody has their own path around how they want to make money. Eventually, I'm sure you have royalties now. But the point is that even at first, some entrepreneurs miss out on the fact that there may be an opportunity within that initial royalty.
Yeah.
Even if there is an mm-hmm. initial, you know, fee associated with that. So I don't want to necessarily say that it's not good to just take the royalties if they're handed to you up front without an upfront fee. Obviously, we all need to eat. But if you're able to cover that and you have the ability and the resources to, you know, do the work, mm-hmm. by all means, take that royalty because you never know. Sometimes
they have the that's where I'm at now. That's where I'm at mm-hmm. now. Like, if I'm willing to do that, because generally I look at it like this. The people I work with, we're building a relationship. If your product is as good as you say it is, you'll keep hiring me to do the same thing. So I'm not particularly worried about that, but if you have people out here that be like, hey, you know, I want to do this thing, and it's always a risk to it. Like, it would have to be a situation where I'm working with like a large organization that has traction, that has the platform
that has the catalog.
To be like, yeah, we could, you know, we might cut your rate in half and you can collect royalties, you know, in perpetuity. I think about it, but because, you know, passive income is important. So, and because I kind of juggle a lot of projects. So that would be a situation where I'm like, let's churn this thing out really quickly. Mm-hmm. Let's knock it out and then let the money come rolling in. So.
Okay, so there isn't would you say there is or isn't a lot of passive income opportunities within your environment, or is there? And you just haven't tapped into that yet. Like, is a lot of the work active?
Yeah, so for me, I look at it like I just haven't fully tapped into like the passive income. Because, you know, for me, I'm like, selling books is still not passive. You're still putting labor into marketing, you're posting, I'm going to comic conventions, I'm like spending my own money to like get to these shows. But now I'm like slipping into the space where it's like, yeah, we got to find ways where, like, you know, you can get some type of book deal where you can kind of generate that revenue off a royalty on a first book or a series.
So I love everything you've said so far because you've talked through, and it's almost subconscious the way you said, if you're an artist and you don't have the relationships yet, you don't have the book, you don't have the IP, make yourself available to the public. You went to the events, you put those 10,000 hours in, you went to Harlem and got that inspiration. I think one is, as an artist, have you seen artists underestimate the power of network? I guess I'll start there.
Yes, I was that artist. That was that kid. I was terrible at networking, marketing in college. I know how to talk to people. I was awkward. And as I've matured in the comic book space and got much better at like talking about myself, my work, I run into a lot of artists and creatives that like they will just like sit behind a table and just draw and not actually talk to people. And so you miss the opportunity of like making a sale, but also you kind of miss the opportunity of like networking with the writers and artists that are around you. So it is something that I have noticed, but once you get over that hurdle of like being an introvert, it really kind of can unlock your potential, what you can kind of do with business.
You said too, it's like repetition, just like any workout, just like any calculus problem. If we want to bring calculus back into this.
I hear you,
bro. So you built up that confidence, that consistency to introduce yourself. You've met people who are self-published and other artists, and now you've cultivated a network. It sounds like at this point you want to kind of dive deeper, invest deeper into those relationships. We're going to talk about, you know, your recent publication that came out. But at this point in your career, are you trying to get every juice out of the lemon, or are you thinking about how can you, you know, make your own lemon tree with expanding this book series? Or are you still networking? Is it all a balance at this point as an entrepreneur?
It's the universe, man. It's not one thing stop. We're not moving in one direction, we're moving in all directions. You gotta like, and I tell young artists this, like you have to be adaptable, you have to be versatile, because like I can't stop one thing. Like I can't stop one, everything kind of works in tandem. And it's all in an income stream of income. So it was like, why lose the bag? So like right now I'm always maintaining the connections I have. And right now I'm stepping into the space of working like most of my writers, and I'm hiring other people to work on my project. So like that's kind of like the goal, is to like, how can we support and hire Black creators? And then from that point, like the goal after producing my own lemon tree would be to like get Growing in the Garden adapted into animation, and we just take that money and like funnel it back in to work on like my other projects that that have to go to the wayside, you know, get shelved for a second.
Oh, that's amazing. So that's the idea of it happens all the time in business with a company like Alphabet. They can take profits from Google Cloud and then use it to launch Google Pixel. Like, it's all still revenue under an entity. That's how you're thinking about your artistry.
Yeah. I'm thinking more like a business person. That's one thing I did not understand. I was more of an artist. But once I started thinking, I was like, I gotta think big. I was like, oh, okay, I see how this works.